It's April 18th, 2024, and welcome to episode 88 of the Baby Metal Podcast. We gather in the podcast Discord server now and again to discuss news and thoughts on the past and future projects of Baby Metal. We invite you to join us, whether you're a longtime fan or have only just arrived. I'm Paul, and I'm joined by Kevin.
Look at us being consistent.
And Maggie.
We are on the roll today.
Absolutely. So I think this is the episode that we recorded the most closely after Fox Day. So we can talk a little bit about the many things that happened on Fox Day and a couple of other things. And then the main topic will be just sort of like considerations in about traveling to Japan, presumably for some kind of Baby Metal show, but some other kind. Things as well. So I guess we could dive in. Fox Day resulted, as far as I can remember, it was basically just kind of like filling in Fox Fest. So the lineup got finalized.
It was nothing more than that.
So we got Bill Murray, someone I had not heard of before, got added.
Yes. He is a, from what I understand, he is a offshoot of a band called Attack Attack, which some of their members are now part of a more widely known band called Beartooth, which is from Ohio. So, yeah.
That's fun.
Interesting. I didn't know any of those things. I don't know any of those band names.
I didn't either.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to a little bit since the announcement, and it's all right. You know, it's good. It's seemed a little bit out of left field, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
A diverse set of musical talent at this thing. Yuko Miller, I'm particularly excited for. Saxophone player. I'm a saxophone player. Or at least I used to be. So that's really exciting. I've been listening to her work ever since that announcement. She's really good. There is a little bit of a connection.
Oh, okay.
It's not completely out of left field. She played with Kari Band on one of their live albums.
So I think another thing that we learned on Fox Day, I think this was the same time, is that Metalverse will be playing backed by Asterism. I don't think we knew that last time we recorded. So that's brand new also as pretty well. Cool.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Two of the Metalverse performers left Amuse since we recorded last, and the promotional image only has three of them, the three that remain with Amuse. So are they down to three? We'll find out.
I guess so. Yeah, that's true. But Asterism in and of themselves is also a three-part band that just recently signed on with Amuse a couple years ago, I believe. They were independent for quite a while. Really, really good guitarist. I cannot think of her name.
I know how it's spelled, and I'm not sure how it's pronounced. It's H-A-L-C-A.
Halka. There we go. Or something along those lines. But she's an excellent guitar player. And then they have the drummer and then the bassist. They play mainly instrumental, but they do some singing as well. Although I have not listened to their recent stuff. So I think some singing might have been included.
Exactly.
They have been known for mostly instrumental, kind of like Polyphia, but really, really good either way. So for them to be backing Metalverse is a very good choice. But that also leads to the question of like, oh, interesting. I wonder who's going to show up at the other, you know, who's backing Baby Metal at that point.
Oh, I doubt it's Asterism.
Well, I know it's not Asterism, like, obviously. But, I mean, like, whether it's going to be, you know, Eastern, Western comedies, that sort of thing. Because usually, it used to be, well, I shouldn't say used to be, Western comedy band backed them for a bit. So that's why I was
For
Metalverse,
Yeah, there was a show, I think, that happened, right? One, like, the first Metalverse show had the Western comedy band.
And then they also played with them at Summer Sonic, excuse me.
Sidebar, I think it's time to just call them the commie band. I don't know that we need to qualify them anymore.
Fair enough.
I think that ship has sailed.
Fair enough. I mean, I understand that point.
Asterism, like one of the things that was kind of, I don't know, unique about them was that when they started, they were like, I don't know, high school, junior high, they were really young. And they did a couple of sort of like EPs and, an album while they were all instrumental. And then I think there's been a couple of, it's like, I don't know, anime video game music covers album that they had, and then an album with vocals on it. And so yeah, it is, they are continuing and developing, and they're no longer like little kids. It was, you know, but they did have that, you know, the sort of like the amazingness of how good they were for being little kids.
Right.
They covered something, Magitsune, I think, when they were little kids.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that connection.
Yeah. The reason I know them is because Omura, I think one of them handed Omura the CD at some, you know, gathering, and Omura tweeted about it and said, like, these guys are really
good.
That's
fun.
So I followed that and got the thing and sort of followed them ever since.
Oh, cool.
But, and I have to say that I think I like the older stuff better at this point, but maybe it's only just familiarity. I don't know. But they're experimenting. That's mm-hmm. what they're doing.
And nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that happened, Summer Sonic Bangkok has Body Slam on the bill. And I don't think we talked about this last time.
No,
but
we didn't.
Body Slam has invited Babe Metal and F-Hero. So there's going to be, there's no reason other than to play Leave It All Behind.
Yeah, they're listed as special mm-hmm. guests on the bill.
So
I would say that's a lock.
And it's probably, they're probably there for just one song. So I you'd have to be pretty dedicated to go to that festival for just the one song. But right. if you're going anyway, you will get it. And I'm sure we'll get a video of it.
Almost certainly. Mm-hmm. Never been to Thailand. It's on the list. It'd be fun. I don't know if I'm willing to go just for that.
It'd be cool.
Let's see. We just recently, as we record anyway, the one set was announced for Legend MM.
Yes.
So it's buyable. It'll ship on July 10th. So that's mm-hmm. That's a pretty quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Spend. I presume you've already bought it, Paul.
Oh yeah.
I'm still debating on whether I'm gonna buy the finals or not. I kind of want to just for, because I really do genuinely want an audio, like a physical audio of that show. Of course, I wasn't at the show, so the DVD portion is like for me, unless they put it on like Google Video or whatever, which they haven't yet here with the last few shows, so I don't foresee that happening. But the vinyls, I might be more interested in. But
yeah, they claim that it's going to be on iTunes in sometime in the future. I don't know about Google though,
mm-hmm.
But. Yeah, I sort of feel like usually when they put these things out, we spend a bunch of time going through like all the different options. There's vinyls, there's a standard Blu-ray and a limited Blu-ray and a DVD and the one with a photo book. But I think I just did. I mean, like,
yeah, that's,
you know,
just I feel
like that's, there's not much, much more it. To say.
Yeah, although the limited edition does come in a, what do they call that, analog-sized case.
Right.
That is the only kind of like semi-difference that they have available this time around.
I think they've pretty much all been, yeah.
They have done that in the past. I mean, that is something that they have done in the past, but I'm just saying that that's probably one of the more, like, quote-unquote special things that they have offering.
My word, I'm not tired of storing those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Should have bought a case.
Man.
That $1,000 case.
Right.
It'd be full.
Well, fair enough. That's true.
You can only, these Blu-ray sets, you can only fit maybe four or five of them in that case.
Oh, the totes. Oh, okay. The totes, yes. Yeah, you can fit so many of those in there.
These vinyl-sized Blu-rays with the photo books are huge.
They are pretty big. But they're definitely worth it if you like, you know, reminiscing and things. It's really nice. But I do have to...
You know what I need? I need a bookcase for the photo books, because what happens is I buy these things, they come, I look through the photo book while I'm ripping the Blu-ray, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool, and then I throw it all back in the box and put it away in a closet.
You probably shouldn't admit that.
Because I ripped the media and put it on my Plex server.
Yeah. I mean, you could put the boxes on your shelves, and then it would just like you to be just a bunch of anonymous brown boxes. You know, it's like, all right, great.
I don't know. At the very least... I don't know, maybe a bookshelf for the photo books, because the photo books are generally pretty nice.
Oh, yeah, they're always really nice.
But like I said, I generally kind of just look at them once, then they go back in the box, and I never look at them again.
Exactly.
Now I just have all of this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But it is worth it for the audio, like for the audio CDs, though. So
yeah, yeah, no. I do enjoy this having the CD and the Blu-ray copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you're thinking about cover art, probably the vinyl and the like the first press, you know, limited edition Blu-ray is going to be the best of all of them, because the one always has just like a dumb looking cover. Like, it's always really boring, and the Blu-rays are always small, you know. Mm-hmm. So, just for display art, you know, I think either the vinyl or the limited edition Blu-ray is probably the way to go.
I'm curious to see what they'll do for the vinyls, since there's going to be a vinyl for each of the nights. There's will be a 20 night and a 21 night one. So I'm curious to see if they'll switch color palettes or something for each one, since there's two separate ones, or if they'll just change the titles on it with the pink in the back. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah. I have not ordered those, and I'm still a little undecided on that. You know, I got all the ones, they got the things that had a deadline on them, and I might get the vinyl from CD Japan if I mm-hmm. change my mind. But yeah,
not planning on the vinyl.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right. Let's see. So, maybe one other thing to mention is that, you know, so the last episode we had here, Kevin talked through his experience at Legend MM, and just recently was on AJ Hartley's channel talking with AJ about other aspects. So a non-overlapping set of aspects. So if you want to hear more about traveling to Legend MM, go listen to that. And if you want to hear mm-hmm. even more about traveling, you know, don't turn off your podcast player now, because we're about to talk about that.
Yes.
Or if you just want to see my face, that's always kind of weird.
Do that. Yeah.
You can go over there and see my face, see what I look like.
If you're curious.
Maybe someday we'll switch formats here.
Yep. Or you could just watch, Legend Metal Galaxy.
True. I do have 0.3 seconds of fame.
Yeah.
I couldn't see you in the 20 night wow broadcast. I mean, maybe you're there somewhere, but I kept my eye out, but you know, I don't know quite exactly where to look, so let me know if you're there somewhere.
I didn't see myself either.
Okay. The only public Baby Metal thing that I've been on is the live stream for Baby Metal's thing at Rock on the Range when they closed out the side stage. I was there at the beginning and the end. But that's not an official broadcast, but it is online. Yeah. You can find it online. So if you're curious as to what I used to look like, there you go.
Excellent. Okay. I think that's probably it. We can probably, we could move on to the topic. So the topic is traveling to Japan, which is something that I myself have done only back when the year started with 19. So I have no particular new recent information, but both of you two, I think, have mm-hmm. traveled multiple times since, you know, mm-hmm. in recent living memory. So,
yes.
So let's maybe just talk about that. What do you want?
It's been about 3 times for me, and it's been a lot more than that for you, Kevin, I think, at this point.
It's been a few.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. been a few.
It's been a few.
I know that we met on the second time I was over. Your first time was Legend M. Mm-hmm. That's where we met. Which is it's so funny. It's still so funny to think, like, the first time I met people from the U.S. was in a totally different country.
Right.
I know, right?
So, isn't
that wild?
It's pretty wild.
Well, anyways.
Anyway.
Paul, why don't you be our rookie and you can be our audience. Who mm-hmm. wants to travel to Japan and ask questions accordingly? We'll educate you, Paul.
That sounds perfect.
Since you haven't been since, I don't know.
Since the tail end of the 20th century.
Since phones had cords.
That's right. Jeez. You didn't want a phone number with a 0 in it. Because it's very hard to dial those. It takes forever.
Right.
Oh, that's a memory I don't need. Thanks for that. All right, let's dive into this thing, shall we?
Yes.
All right. So I've broken this up for us a little bit. We're going to talk about tickets, concert tickets specifically, some pre-planning. We'll talk about airfare, lodging, getting around in Japan, and then kind of what to expect on the concert day, and then some suggestions on things to do while you're there. Again, I want to preface this. I've only traveled from the U.S. to Japan. I have no perspective on what it's like to travel from Europe. Mm-hmm. So keep that lens in mind, though I would wager a lot of what I'm saying, maybe excluding airfare, is going to still apply.
Yes. Very
accurate. And maybe if we have some Europeans in chat, it's pretty late. I don't think we do. They can chime in and we can relay those as we get them. Mm-hmm. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Sounds perfect.
All right. So you want to go to Japan to see Baby Metal. First thing off, if you're not a resident of Japan, you need a passport and it has to be current and valid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like how long the turnaround time is. So like if you want to go in May, no, just forget it.
Yeah, pretty much right. Forget it. Unless you know exactly the day that you're leaving and you want to pay an excruciatingly large amount of money to for the turnaround.
So I actually know what this is. It's 6 to 8 weeks if you're in the U.S. to get a brand new passport and you don't pay the expedited fee. It goes down to 3 weeks if you pay an extra, I think it's $100 for an expedited fee. Mm-hmm. If you're really in a pinch, you can go to an embassy or passport control center in a big city with an appointment and get it done in 14 days, but it costs an arm and a leg.
Yeah. You need to be prepared ahead of time to know if you're, you know, going to be going, which some of these concerts do get announced like 2 months ahead of time. So technically you have time, but you're going to be pushing your luck. So if you already know that you want to go, just do yourself a favor, do it ahead of time, get yourself a passport. It'll be so much easier. And passports, or at least for the U.S., last for 10 years. So once you get it, you're good for a hot minute.
Right. And Funny Toss did mention in chat, depending on where you live, if you're not in the U.S., you may need to actually apply for a visa before you arrive. So check before you go if that is a treaty agreement with Japan and your country of residence.
That's true.
All right. So for me, I like to schedule around tentpole events. And what I mean by that is, what is the reason I'm going for? In this context, we're going to a concert.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Woo, we're going to go see Baby Metal. So what I like to do, my personal preference, is to arrive in Japan a few days before the show, do the show. And then if I'm going to stay and be a tourist or explore and do fun things that aren't concert related or Baby Metal related, do it after the concert. And the reason I do this is it minimizes the blues, the Baby Metal blues. Mm-hmm. I learned this lesson pretty early. My first couple of trips, I would do Baby Metal at the very end. And what would happen was, you know, I'd go, I'd have fun. We'd be going out, we'd be seeing friends. Then we'd go to a concert and you'd be on this incredible high. And then the very next day you're at the airport sitting on an airplane, weeping your whole way home because you went from this incredible emotional high to, it's over, now I have to go back to the real world.
Yep.
Right.
So that's my preference. Your mileage may vary, but I do like to schedule around that. Mm-hmm. Some more things you should do before you plan your trip. Make sure your credit or debit cards are set up to work internationally. Yes. Depending on your bank, you might need to call and say, hey, I'm going to Japan. Don't lock my card. You don't want to show up and not be able to access your money. That is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Same with your cell phone. Your cell phone will probably roam when you get there. Don't let it do that. That will cost you a fortune.
Yes.
Most carriers offer some sort of international package, though that's probably really expensive. So there are some alternatives. If you have a newer phone and you support eSIM or can have multiple SIMs, you can do what I do and use a provider like Ubiggy. It's a cheap data-only high-speed eSIM. And for example, it only cost me $17 for 10 gigabytes, and that 10 gigabytes lasts 30 days or until I use it all and have to re-up it. As soon as I get to Japan, I just flip that SIM on, pay my $17, and I'm good to go. I don't have to deal with the roaming. I disable all the roaming and all of that stuff. And if you're an iPhone user like I am, your iMessage and all of your stuff will forward to your phone just normally through that data connection. It won't even appear to people that aren't with you that you're in Japan.
Excellent.
Another option is something called pocket Wi-Fi. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's a little brick you throw in your backpack or your pocket. It connects to local cell service, emits a Wi-Fi signal. You disable your phone's data and you connect to it as a Wi-Fi hotspot and carry that around with you. I personally have never used one. I'm a lean traveler. I don't like carrying stuff I don't need. So the idea of having a little brick in my backpack that I also have to charge and worry about is not appealing. But a ton of people do use this thing and they are pretty reasonably priced.
They are. And you can rent them out for a specific amount of time, like 4 days, 7 days. I think you can do it up to 2 weeks, depending on who you rent them from. You can rent them from multiple different online entities and rent them from in Japan as well. Although if you rent them from online entities, they will ship them to your airport that you're arriving at, because there's package pickups there at the airports. And like I said, they're pretty reasonably priced. I think the last time I was there, I think I got one for like a week. That needed one for a long period of time. I think a week was like $50 or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But that's also why, like, it's Wi-Fi. But yeah, it's always worked well for me. There's been a couple times where I had a little small situation, but it was rectified. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there are places if you want to get a physical SIM too, you can get a local SIM. If you fly into either airport in Tokyo Haneda or Narita, there are places where you can purchase physical SIMs or pocket Wi-Fis in the arrival terminal. So that is an option if you forget or aren't sure what to do and want to make a decision when you get there. Let's talk a little bit about money. You can pre-purchase yen before you leave. Most banks will do it if you call and give them a heads up and say, hey, I want to buy yen. There are services and specialty places where you can go and convert currency here to do that. I don't usually do that. I try and keep all of my money digital and keep my cash flow to a minimum. But that is an option. Take advantage of the good exchange rate, especially if you're going soon. Stocking up on yen when it's favorable, like right now, I think it's 154 yen to one US dollar or right around there. So if I went and bought a bunch of yen and it stabilized and the exchange rate got less favorable, you know, you're basically getting free money when you go at this point. I know several people who will pre-purchase their yen based on the exchange rate to save a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
Cash is still king there. Lots of places take card now. Then that's kind of a recent development. I think that might be a COVID thing. Prior to COVID, a lot of places I went to still were cash only. Post-COVID, way more places take card now. But you will find, you know, smaller stores or places or where it just might be more convenient to pay with cash. And if you do that, be ready to have a ton of coins. Coins are everywhere. There's a ton of them. You can get a coin purse at Don Quixote or a department store for pretty cheap to store them. If you're European, you're probably used to having a lot of coins. It's a similar system, but be prepared. They weigh a lot and you're going to get a lot of useless small denomination ones.
Yeah. Kind of pre-think how you're paying before you get up to the counter.
Yeah. Everyone's going to love you at the merch line when you start like counting little coins.
Yeah. So yeah. Funny sidebar, a friend of mine, we found a secondhand like DVD store and he found a DVD from like 15 years ago. A Japanese salaryman quit his job to become Michael Jackson, a Michael Jackson cover artist. It was 10 yen in this bin. The DVD is hilarious. Fantastic, by the way. it's called This Is Fake. If you ever find it, highly recommend. It was the best 10 yen I've ever spent. But I bring it up because he paid in 10 1 yen coins, which was really funny to me.
Oh, gosh.
And that's, I don't know. What is 10 yen in US dollars? Like 6 cents? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about concert tickets a little bit. All concert tickets for Baby Metal in Japan use a lottery system. You enter for the privilege to spend money and go to these things. When you enter, you'll be automatically charged if you win. There are usually multiple lotteries. So if you don't hit the first one, odds are you'll have another chance.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't live in Japan, you will need to enter the foreigner lottery. That's a little bit different. Follow the social medias. They always post links. Sometimes it's buried at the very bottom of these ticket announcements. Click here for foreigner lottery. It's going to ask you some questions, where you live, your name, usual buying stuff on the internet kind of form. You'll find out when the lottery date ends and your card is charged what you won, but you don't know exactly where you won. If you enter for a pit ticket, you're not going to know until you get to the concert where exactly you're going to be, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Yes.
recent development, last couple of shows, you've been able to enter Chomosh or Supermosh as a foreigner. You do need the one membership to do that. What those tickets are, you are closer to the stage or you have a more favorable seat. Your pit has a better view. Sometimes you might get an extra special gift if there are special gifts at that show. And they are more expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, only recently they've kind of started added foreigner Chomosh, which is really, really great. Mm-hmm. Because the foreigner lottery, for every single time I've won, we've all the foreigners have been in the same pit as far away as humanly possible from the stage. So think about that. When you get these pit tickets, you're going to be far away if you're in the pit. There's nothing you can do about it. I don't know why they do it that way, but you're going to be in a corner as far away as possible. So having the foreigner show is a pretty big deal because that means you can actually see the show pretty well from the floor. I want to mention too, if you don't win and you still want to go, just roll the dice and go. In my experience, there's always extra tickets floating around. A lot of people will enter the multiple lotteries more than once, even if they already have tickets, to make sure that everybody who wants to go can get tickets. Mm-hmm. It can get a little murky, particularly with the foreign tickets, because you need to be there in person with the passport of the person who bought the ticket to get the ticket. But Japanese tickets are pretty easily transferable once you're there, and they're pretty good at handing paper tickets around to people who need them.
Hmm. Still sounds pretty scary to get on the plane and land there and go to the venue, not really knowing if you have a ticket to get
it. It's a little spooky. I will say for The Sun Always Rises, Sun Always Rises, the one right before Legend M, my first show, mm-hmm. in Japan, I didn't have a ticket until the week I left. I found somebody who had a Japanese fan who had an extra, but I'd already bought everything at that point. And I just kind of rolled the dice on the advice of someone else who said, just go get there. We'll find you a ticket. I've reciprocated this. I've been on the other end of that several times now, and mm-hmm. can pretty well confirm that if you show up, we'll get you in.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a way, Paul. There's always a way.
All right.
There is.
All right. So let's talk about airfare. Again, I have never flown from Europe, so this section probably won't apply from you if you're European or from anywhere other than the U.S. So keep that in mind. All of this, I live in California. I've done my best to kind of figure out what works best for everywhere in the U.S., but I was not even going to attempt to figure out best practices for flying from anywhere else.
Right.
We can maybe try and find an expert and do a follow-up for in other locations someday and how to get there.
Do just strictly airfare airfare episode. I mean, yeah. That'd be kind of nice.
Maybe we can bolt in a section and make it internationally distributed. So anyways, first thing I want to mention, sign up for airline mileage accounts. Do it. It's free to sign up. Every time you get it on an airplane, make sure you attach it to your mileage account so that you get credit for that flight. That's mm-hmm. how I'm able to do what I do. Long one. Yeah, that's how I'm able to go as often as I am. I'm pretty good about keeping up on miles and using some other tricks I'll talk about in a minute so that I'm not always paying 100% out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, travel rewards credit cards are a great option. Just make sure you don't fall into a debt trap. I use a Chase card that gives me miles I can spend on flights, hotels, all kinds of travel stuff. And it's really favorable for certain purchases. Like all purchases, I think you get double points. So if I spend $1, I get 2 points. If I spend it on food or travel, I get like 5x points. So if I spend $1, I get $5. So I accrue miles pretty quickly because I put a lot of my purchases on that card and then pay it off every month. And I'm going to say that again, pay it off every month. Don't fall into a debt trap with these things.
Yes.
Because their interest rates are trash. It can be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do not fall into that trap. But that is the biggest reason I'm able to go as often as I am, because I'm able to make some purchases on this card, pay them off, and then accrue miles and miles over and over so I can get... it's been a while since I've had a quote-unquote free flight, but I'm usually able to save $300 or $400 per trip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so where should you go when looking at these things? If you're going to fly into Tokyo, there's two airports, Narita and Haneda. Narita mm-hmm. is in Chiba Prefecture, and it's about 90 minutes on the train away. It's pretty far. Hmm. Haneda is in Tokyo, and mm-hmm. only a half an hour from like Shibuya on local mm-hmm. train. So it's close. Mm-hmm. That being said, Narita is way mm-hmm. cheaper. Way cheaper, because it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's also yeah. a bigger airport, has more flights, more options. I tried to come up with an example that might be relatable to folks in the US. The closest one that came to mind was like, if you go to New York City, it's like flying into Newark instead of JFK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Newark is going to be cheaper because it's in New Jersey, not New York.
Right.
Flying mm-hmm. into Narita is going to be cheaper. Mm-hmm. But depending on what you want to do and what your priorities are, maybe you want to arrive in Tokyo, Tokyo proper rather than Chiba.
It's interesting. I don't think I'd ever heard of Haneda before.
Oh, really?
But, mm-hmm. is it, I assume it's not like new within the last 20 years or something, is it?
No.
I don't know when Haneda opened. It's built on reclaimed land in Tokyo Bay. I don't know the exact date on when it opened.
Doing okay. research now.
The world is our oyster. Yeah. Feel free to Google open. That.
1931.
Okay. Yep.
No, that's what it says. Haneda was open in 1931.
Probably not a lot of air traffic at that point, but...
Haneda Airport, originally known as Tokyo Haneda Airfield, first opened its runways in 1931 on a small reclaimed land area at the western end of the present-day airport complex. Since then, it has undergone significant developments and expansions, most of it through the 1950s and 60s.
Excellent.
Hmm. Okay,
there
then.
You go.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Google.
Thank you, Dr. Google.
I guess it is. That is one thing, and this probably will come up more in like the things to do when you're there. But it's probably worth looking at a map and trying to see like yeah. where yes. these things are with relation relative to each other. You know,
that's
where
really
is
true.
Osaka if you're trying to go to Osaka?
Yeah. Right.
So that's the third airport. If the show you're going to and you're trying to arrive there and go straight to the show like I do, and it's in. You know, it's on the south end of Honshu or it's in Osaka. Kansai does have a big international airport that does have a ton mm-hmm. of flights in and out. So that is an option if you don't want to mm-hmm. fly into Tokyo.
There is also another airport in Osaka that's a smaller regional airport, but Kansai is the largest one. And that'll get you, like I said, down to the more southern port other than Okinawa.
mm-hmm. Yeah. But like Funny Toss mentioned in chat, most of the big tentpole shows that Baby Metal does are in, around, or near Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. That's very accurate.
they haven't done one of those big shows down south in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you end up in Narita, you have some options to get into the city. There are two express trains that are geared towards foreigners and travelers that have space for luggage and things like that. One is the Narita Express. The other is the Skyliner. Everything when you get there in the arrival terminal is super clearly labeled. There's even yes. bright pink and blue things, pathways painted on the ground for you to follow to get your ticket. Most of the staff there speaks reasonably enough English. You just tell them where you want to go. They'll hand you a ticket. You hand them some money and you hop on your train. You can get in. So it's even though you're about 90 minutes away, kind of out in the middle of nowhere in Chiba at Narita, it's still very convenient to connect mm-hmm. into Tokyo.
It's a very pretty ride too.
It you know, I do actually really enjoy that train ride coming in.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very nice.
You do have the option to take the bus. I've done that once. It's pretty cheap. It takes a little bit longer, of course, because it's a bus, not a train. But that is an option. You can connect to any of the major train station terminals that have bus stations in Tokyo, like Shinjuku or Shibuya or Tokyo Station, mm-hmm. if you want to save a few bucks, because the trains are a little expensive. I think they're... I want to say they're about $30 or so, $25,
$30. That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds about right.
On average, depending on what station you want to get off at when you get down there. So once you've kind of picked what airport you want to arrive at, let's talk about some airlines. From the west coast of the U.S., I recommend Zip Air. They're JAL's low-cost airline. They fly old JAL 787s, so their equipment is nice. It's an old product, but it's well-maintained. They often have sales for as little, you know, as like $600 round trip from the west coast of the U.S., which is pretty darn reasonable. I think on average with them, I've paid maybe a little over that $600, like $700, $750 or so round trip. Some caveats with that, because they're a budget airline, there's no in-flight entertainment. You have to prepay your meal. You prepay if you want to select your seat. You prepay if you want checked baggage. So that's kind of where they make up some of that savings. It's gotten to the point now, kind of with inflation and taxes, where it's oftentimes they're cheap, but it's still worth looking at other air carriers to make sure they are still the cheapest option. Because depending on your dates, they might not be.
Mm-hmm.
JAL and ANA are the flag carriers. Like American Airlines, Air France, British Airways, JAL and ANA are the flag carriers for Japan. They are going to be mm-hmm. your most expensive options, but they're super bougie. Their food is yes. great. Their product is super modern, super yes. clean, great flight yes. crews. Like it's a nice traveling experience flying on those airlines.
It's so fantastic. Both of them.
You really pay for it.
I mean, you do pay for it. Like they even give you like heated like face cloths and stuff mm-hmm. during your flight. And then like Kevin said, the food is just really, really good for your dinners, for everything. The stewards and stewardesses are just the sweetest people. And I do at least one time in your life recommend flying on one or the other of those. Because it's totally worth the money. Yeah,
their international product is super nice. So here's one of my travel hacks for if you're not on the West Coast like I am. Get to a hub city. It will be cheaper. Hmm. So Maggie does not yes. live on the West Coast. Paul no, does not I don't. Live on the West Coast. You want to come to Japan, look at airlines like Southwest or book an itinerary that gets from your closest airport to, say, LAX, SFO, or Seattle. And then look at an itinerary that goes from LAX to Japan and back. Book separately. That will significantly reduce your cost.
Yeah, I'm going to have to
You
can get
cross-country on Southwest for as little as $400, depending on when you book it. If you book an itinerary that takes you from wherever you are on the East Coast all the way to Japan and back, it will be $500 or $600 more expensive than if you book separately. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty consistent.
Yeah, I've moved further east now. I'm actually pretty much on the coast at this point, well, close-ish, and the price difference is just it's so mm-hmm. killer. It's so killer. Like when I originally went the first the other three times that I have went, I was still living back where I grew up, and I had two airplane options, and they were relatively like reasonable, but it was cheaper to drive an extra half hour to save like $300 or $400. And so I was like, okay, I could do this. But now over farther east, it's awful.
Yeah.
It's so expensive.
I would sort of guess that the airline, like it may be a little bit hard to compare, pre and post COVID airline prices. It may not have been just moving to the east. True. It might have been just that everything got more expensive.
That too. Prices have gone up. Even back home, even back home prices have gone up a bit. So yeah, no, you're totally right on that, Paul.
Okay. Yeah. Sadly, though.
On the other end of choosing airlines, I have some advice from years of being an aviation nerd and knowing a ton of pilots. Avoid some airlines. You want to avoid Air China, Ava Air, Asiana. There's a theme in the region of these airlines. Poor safety culture, poor pilot training. I'm spooked to getting on those flights. So mm-hmm. something to think about when you're booking. Now, I'm not saying if you get on one of those airplanes, you're going to crash and die. But I have not heard good things from pilot friends about their pilot culture at those airlines. So I'm just going to pass that on as a, put that out there. Just going to put that out there. Something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yep. Okay.
So a recent thing I've figured out, Hawaiian Airlines has a pretty cheap flight between Honolulu and Narita. Pretty cheap.
Hmm.
Because there's a ton of Japanese tourists. They love to come to Hawaii. That is like one of the number one international tourist destinations for Japanese people, Hawaii.
You see that a lot in video games.
Yeah.
Especially Persona.
So much so, if you're walking around in Honolulu, you'll often see signs in English and Japanese.
Right.
So I mentioned that because there are low-cost carriers that can get you to Hawaii to take advantage of some of this. Southwest is one. Alaska Airlines is one of them. So again, doing the split itinerary trick, if you can get yourself to Hawaii for pretty cheap, the flight between Hawaii and Japan is very reasonable.
And may not be actually all that terrible to just be in Hawaii for a little bit.
It's really not. That. A couple of trips ago, I came home through Hawaii on Hawaiian Airlines, and I had a four or five hour layover in Honolulu, and I left the airport, went down to the beach, found a bar. It was great. It was the best layover of my life.
That's great.
Yeah, fantastic. Plus, you're in Hawaii, like Paul mentioned. Those are my tips and tricks for airfare. If you are on the East Coast, I'll mention that, or just maybe east of the Mississippi. I know Denver, Chicago, and Houston also have direct flights to Japan.
Yes, Chicago does for sure.
But I haven't looked at pricing for things like that, so that's an option as well if you don't want to come all the way out west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say from many experiences that the Chicago, albeit it is a very large airport, but it is also a very nice airport. So if you ever have to fly out of Chicago, some people may say but I personally enjoyed it and it's very nice. It has a lot of Pokemon Go stops. Just in case you're into that.
Yeah, really the biggest takeaway.
O'Hare, you mean?
Yeah, O'Hare.
What's
there
that?
There are two. Oh, O'Hare, you mean, right?
O'Hare, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Midway is
Yeah, the too other small. One is Midway. It's more of a regional airport, mm-hmm. but they do operate very few internationals, but mainly regional.
Canada and Mexico, probably, just out of Midway. Mm-hmm. If you take one thing away from talking about booking airfare, it's seriously consider two itineraries to get you to a hub city, because that will save you money. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so you have your concert tickets, you have airfare, now you got to figure out where the heck you're going to stay and how the heck you're going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. That's a whole wide world in of itself.
Yes, it is.
so two things I'll say right off the bat. International hotel chains, way more expensive than domestic Japanese ones. What I mean is your Hyatts, your Hiltons, Marriott, Four Seasons. If it's not doesn't have a Japanese name or a name you can't pronounce, it's going to be way more expensive. Mm-hmm. When you go onto these sites like Expedia, Hotels.com, Booking.com, all the places where you can go and purchase these things, you're going to find other hotels, and you can actually filter out the Western ones. You can kind of identify these because they're going to be between the $45 and $75 per night for one of these domestic hotels, whereas these international ones are going to be $200+ easily.
Yeah.
Now there's some trade-offs.
Very easily.
Your international hotel, you're going to get a big old Western style room where you can spread out, have tons of space, big bathroom, all the things you would expect from a big Western hotel chain, right?
Yeah.
These little domestic Japanese hotels are tiny. Mm-hmm. And I can't stress enough how small they are. There is enough room for the bed, a place for you to walk, a tiny little desk, and a tiny little bathroom. Mm-hmm. I would wager a guess at 30 square feet, 40 square feet, something like that, maybe. They're pretty small, but they are really cheap. Mm-hmm. One suggestion, there's a huge chain. They're all over Japan. APA is, I'm just going to say it's the biggest budget hotel chain in Japan. They're nice. They're clean. A lot of them have bathing facilities, like a public bath, in addition to your hotel room, bathroom, that kind of thing. And they're everywhere. If you just searched APA over Tokyo, you will run out of results and run out of time. They're genuinely everywhere. But if you're going to find, if you're going to find a hotel and it's a price thing, I just highly recommend you look at the reviews, look at the pictures of the rooms, look at what other people are saying, and just make sure it's clean, make sure it's what you expect, because you might see a $20 a night hotel room, but it might be a capsule hotel. That might not be your thing. I'm 6'3". Sleeping in a tube for a week is not something I would want to do.
I have done it. It can very much vary because obviously your comfort level, because you are kind of sharing this hall with all these tubes in it with other people, and you're sharing a bathroom with other people, it can be a little awkward at times. But as far as the capsules themselves are concerned, you know, sometimes, you know, big, small, that sort of thing. And also the type of mat that's inside of it, the comfort of it can sometimes be not so comfortable. Can be very unsoft, depending on if you like it that way or not, I guess. But for the price, though, sometimes it's very worth it. I know when I went to, it was the last show, so it was Legend Metal Galaxy. Went to a capsule hotel in Chiba, and it had a spa resort attached to it, and it was $50 a night, and it was great. It was really nice, and they had a huge library. And albeit the front desk unfortunately didn't really know a whole lot of English, but they did use a translator tablet, which was really nice. But other than that, it was just a really, really nice little capsule hotel. Of course, they separate out women and men. They all have individual bathrooms. And then, of course, they have the onsen, the spas section, women and men. But it was really nice. So you can get yourself a really nice experience, even within town, for relatively cheap. It's obviously, it really just depends on what you yourself want to experience, and what you deem as important. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, do you want a small little room to, you know, because you're not going to be there, you're going to be roaming around all day? Or do you expect to be kind of like, I want to be space and room, you know? You obviously do what you do for your comfort level and obviously your budget, but just know that you do have all these options available to you. And even the cheapest option, like above slightly cheapest option, is still pretty good.
Definitely. Hmm. I'll add too, I've never done a capsule. I'm just too big. There's no world in which I'll fit in one and I'll be miserable.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, like a lot of people do it, especially for just one or two nights. That is a great way just to have a place to sleep. Or if you need one in a pinch, which we can talk about in our next section. One piece of advice I want to mention too about looking at these hotels. A lot of people, particularly at least here in the US, if you think $45 for a hotel room per night, what's the first thing that comes to mind, Paul, if you're booking that in, say, New York?
Well, I would say like quite dirty and loud and not near anything.
Exactly.
The exact opposite is true. I've stayed in places that are nicer at $40 a night than some of the places I've stayed at $200 a night here in the U.S. I've never had a bad experience. That's not to say they aren't out there, but generally speaking, if it's one of these Japanese business hotels and you look at the pictures and it looks reputable, it's going to be clean. Staff is going to be friendly. It's going to be safe. It's going to be in a good area. They're going to let you drop your luggage off if you arrive before check-in. You know, things like that. So it's just not something I'm really worried about, as opposed to when I'm booking cheap accommodation anywhere else in the world.
True.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So that's getting to Tokyo. What I like to do, if the show is in a particular place, like it's in Chiba, for example, Makuhara Messe, or Foxfest is in Saitama, which is, you know, 45 minutes away, an hour away on the train from the kind of the middle of Tokyo. I like to stay near where the concert is because that's really convenient for a number of reasons. If it's a weekend show like a Saturday, Sunday, you know, I'll book the Friday through Monday at a hotel near the concert venue. I like to do things like drop off merch. Depending on the time of year, maybe change my clothes. Like if it's really cold in the winter, I can drop my big coat off and shed some layers because it will be warm inside in the pit and you don't want to mosh with a big old heavy coat and things like that. You can take a nap. You can wander around. It's just nice having your hotel nearby. So I always book something nearby the venue. For the rest of the time, and if it's your first time in Japan or first time in a long time, Paul, or first time in the 21st century, odds are you want to be in Tokyo and do the fun things that are in Tokyo. So when you're shopping around for your hotels, I recommend staying near kind of one of the major train lines, the Yamanote line. That's kind of the main loop that goes through all of the stuff tourists want to see and do. You might have heard of some of these places like Shibuya, Shinjuku, Akihabara, Tokyo Station. Yamanote Line kind of goes through all of that. So being within walking distance to one of those stations is super convenient. Even if you don't want to go to one of those kind of big major hub cities like Shinjuku, you'll be able to connect from the Yamanote Line to anywhere in the country extremely easily.
Yes.
And all the map apps, all of the like Expedias and Bookings, you can zoom in and you can see the stations. You can click on them for the most part and kind of see what trains go through there, or they'll be labeled on the map, Yamanote Line. You can't miss it. Highly recommend staying on or near something on that line. Don't be afraid to book, too. If you want to book in like Shinjuku, where all the crazy and party nightlife stuff happens, go nuts. I kind of recommend everybody does it once. It's not really for me anymore. I like staying out in the boonies, personally. Mm-hmm. But it is fun kind of being in the nightlife center area for a little bit, because there's a ton to do.
Yeah. I've had that experience a couple times. I don't understand how people can stay up to like 4 a.m. Like, that just sounds absurd to me. But we do have friends that we both know very well that can do that. And it's just like, you do you, whatever. But yeah, there are places. And of course, you know, there's also other things to do. There isn't, you know, just... You know, there isn't just Baby Metal as a musical group. There's tons of other groups, too. And then, of course, you have your underground idols and your, you know, just general weird performers and all sorts of different stuff. So, you know, you can always just randomly end up at a little show downtown in Shinjuku with Hanako, the 13th generation toilet ghost. Who can scream her head off and keep her voice afterwards, which is crazy. Great lady. Very, very nice. But boy, howdy, she can put you in a chokehold if she wants you to.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I believe
she's great. She is great. Probably not your speed, Paul, but she's fantastic either way. Staying in town too does give you the opportunity to be able to kind of do things randomly as far as going to other shows as well. That's kind of where I was getting at with that.
It's very easy to find a concert if that's your jam. I'm not going to say it's the live music capital of the world, because I don't think they can claim that. But if you want to find a show, there's a show.
Yeah. Cool. And some very interesting locations as well. Like, most of the time, at least for the smaller idol shows, they're in the basement of this large building that you have to find the door, like, hidden behind a stairwell over to the right-hand side of this huge, like, tree bush and stuff. It's crazy. But there's this little performance area with a little tiny stage with a little, like, metal railing and stuff, and they have concerts there, and you pay, like, 15 yen, and then you get, like, 5 yen for a drink or something, and they perform. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, one thing that you said, about being near the train station, one thing I do recall. So when I was there, you know, before Baby Metal existed, I was staying in a ryokan. Yeah, it's sort of like a traditional little inn. You know, it's not a chain of any sort. I don't know how I found it, but it was actually right near the train station. Like, you could sort of like look out the window and see the train station. And one aspect of that is that the thing would like sing to you all day, all night. The train station has a little song that says like, this is the station you want to get off on if you are aiming for that station.
Oh, and, yeah, true.
So it's a pretty cool thing, but if you're actually like situated there trying to sleep, you will hear it a lot.
Yeah. I've stayed really adjacent to stations. None of the hotels I've been in, I've had never had a noise problem with like the trains or anything like that. And part of the reason is, and we'll talk about this next, is trains don't run overnight. They stop. They have a hard stop around midnight and don't start up again until 5 o'clock in the morning. So you are guaranteed some respite from that if you find yourself in a location where the jingles are happening and they're keeping you awake.
Yes.
It was charming initially.
I love it. Yeah, all the stations have unique little jingles, and there's some documentaries about some of the composers over the years that have come up with these jingles for all the little stations. It's It's great. Mm-hmm. I love it.
All right. There's so much to say about this general topic of traveling to Japan to see a baby metal show.
Yep.
That just for everyone's sanity, we're going to stop here and we'll pick this up next time, talking about the trains and actually going to the venue itself, the day of the concert and what happens there. And that's it for this episode. You can join us on the Babe Metal Podcast Discord to continue the conversation. Rating the podcast on whatever platform you listen on will help people find it, so please do that. And until next time, see you.
See you.